Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Fast Pod. I'm Greg Cleland, and I'm here with my top tabloid tale teller co-host, John Doran. John, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Another busy week. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Yeah, I'm actually, as much as I love motorsport, it's almost overload over the past week or so. There's been some brilliant events on, so it's been a lot to take in. What have you been watching?
I found myself having highlights and headlines. The highlight undoubtedly was Valentino Rossi getting his first podium in the very catchily named GT World Endurance Europe. It was just brilliant to see his joy and his passion at winning it, at getting the podium. It was just brilliant to see when you think of what he's done in his career.
Yeah, I mean, he has also, though, all got, he's got a little bit of track record being fast in four wheels, doesn't he? Because he actually tested F1 when he was at the sort of peak of his MotoGP career. And I saw him up close, testing and driving some events in WRC2. So, you know, he has got a bit of form. And if you're a fast motorcycle racer, you know, you've probably got the skills needed to be fast on track as well and four wheels, haven't you?
Oh, definitely, definitely. But talking of two wheels, the Northwest 200 at the weekend probably made headlines for the wrong reasons. And in a row over carbon wheels and a row over basically over the rules. And while I understand safety and that's always got to be paramount, I find it hard to believe that a team can go through scrutineering and go through even through qualifying before it's found that they're not going to go ahead in the race.
Yeah, I caught that too, John. And, you know, I like the Northwest 200. It's obviously the kind of build generally is the warm-up for the TT and things like that as well. And, you know, to have one of the biggest teams effectively walk out the paddock is not a good look, is it? You'd think that if there was some issue, even if it hadn't been discovered early on, like it should have been, that they brokered some sort of compromise to keep them in. So it wasn't a great look. And also, there was a lot of complaints about tyre problems there, which was causing, the riders and teams a bit of worry about delamination and tyres going so on. You really do not want that when you're doing 200 miles per hour, you know, on open roads in road racing. So that's pretty concerning, isn't it?
The one thing that you really want to be working well is are your tyres. I know that sounds very slightly nerdy, but when you go to the MotoGP, which was on in France, they had a situation where a VIP car took a wrong turn in and ended up on the track.
That's even worse than Formula One the other week, where there was guests in the pit lane while a car came in.
That's just great. You wonder how that could happen. But, I mean, the Ocon one I've actually got some sympathy for, because, and I'm sure you'll appreciate this, you can go to a race meeting and have so many jobs to do that you don't actually watch the racing.
Oh, yeah, so, I mean, I've experienced that. I mean, to be honest, you know, the bulk of the time I would be working with teams, people think, you know, you're strolling around watching the racing. I virtually never get to stand out and watch on track. You're too busy in the media center or the garage looking at data and things like that. So yeah, you're right, you don't really get to see the racing very much except for the highlights.
Yeah, so some poor guy at Formula One race, which, you know, as you well know, is well regimented, and he'll have a thing that says 1337 move barriers across, and he won't have seen any of that race. And yet there's been an awful lot of, you know, of talk saying, oh, this should never have happened. And it shouldn't have happened. But I do have some sort of sympathy for them.
Yeah, I guess it's been interesting, though, that there's been a lot of issues with officiating and things like that recently in various forms of motorsport. And, you know, a lot of grumbles about decision-making of stewards and things like that. And I don't know, I just wonder whether there's just a little bit too much complaining and too much social media chatter about it. I mean, let's be honest, down through the years, there's always been decisions that people haven't loved, but is it getting worse, or is there just more focus on it, a bit like referees and VAR in football?
I think the social media is highlighting it more. But I mean, if you listen to Twitter over the weekend, then you would think there was more action in the steward's office than there was on the track at Le Mans.
Yeah. I guess one decision that I did take issue with, but I think it's probably got a silver lining. I'm obviously a big fan of rallying. I was watching the Rally Portugal and the WRC over the weekend, which is a good event. And there was a slightly odd decision where young Oliver Solberg, son of the famous Petter, he did a donut to, you know, please the fans, bit of showmanship, which everybody loves, surely what the sport of rallying in particular is about. And he got a time penalty for it, which pretty much cost him the WRC2 victory from Gus Greensmith. Now, actually, you know, it was a weird one because it turns out when you delve into FIA rules, they actually don't ban donuts, but they delegate the responsibility of whether, when and where they're allowed to each event. So Oliver quite rightly said, "I didn't know I was allowed to you know, not to do this at this event." So that probably needs fixed and clarified. And a few of the drivers and crews have come out and said that. But what I did love about what he did, he took a leaf right out of his father's book. You know, Petter's nickname's Hollywood after all. And he basically just said, you know, he posted on social media with donut emojis. He actually took a picture going and buying some after the rally and things like that. And he just turned the dial up on the PR. And I actually think it'll have won him lots and lots of new fans and probably done a bit of good for the sport into the bargain.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes the sport needs to realise that, you know, publicity is good for the sport and it's good for the way that the sport is going to go forward in the future. We've spoken before about, you know, the sport has to attract young people as well. And that's the sort of thing they enjoy. But taking it in a slightly different way, I saw it's the Nürburgring 24-hour race this weekend. And I saw that they've got an official mascot, which is Legend the Fox. And some poor guy has to dress up in a fox's costume and wander around that circuit for 24 hours.
John, I fear for his life. I mean, I'm not being funny, but, you know, the reputation of fans at the Nürburgring, you know, there's a lot of drink taking. They get pretty wound up during the night. Is he going to be safe?
You can only hope. You also have to say that as a driver, you really don't fancy seeing a fox on the track at the Nordschleife.
Not on that side.
But speaking of which, it is, as I say, the Nürburgring 24. So it seemed right that we spoke to Falcon driver Klaus Bartler about his expectations for the weekend. Klaus, welcome to the Fast Pod.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How is it all looking for you in the Falcon car ahead of the race?
For sure, it's the biggest weekend at the Nordschleife with the 24 hours. And so far, it was a really good preparation this season. It seems to be that we made a good step from last year. Also, I mean, we know exactly what weather conditions we need to be competitive. I would say I'm quite confident that we have good luck with the weather conditions. And so it looks really good. I'm very happy about it.
How do you prepare mentally and physically for a 24-hour race?
Physically, it's maybe a bit harder than some other 24-hour race. I would rate Nürburgring and Spa the two hardest 24-hour races, in my opinion. In the end, that's our job. I mean, we prepare ourselves during the season, so it's mentally it's maybe the hardest one because of the track conditions, because of the high speed we have, because of this different class racing, which means you need to be careful also with traffic overtaking and so on. And in the end, as we all know, one small mistake, one small issue can end everything. So this is mentally, for sure, you need to be really concentrated and it's mentally hard. But I mean, I have done it now. It's my eighth Nürburgring 24-hour race. So it gets for sure easier with more years because you know exactly what to expect. But on the other hand, it's also, again, every year a challenge and it's excitement. So I'm looking forward that we can start this weekend.
Klaus, just a quick question from me. I've been fortunate to work at lots of great racetracks across Europe, but I have to confess I've never been to the Nürburgring yet. So it's still on my tick list. Would you say it's actually a tougher event than the 24 hours of Le Mans because of, you know, the track conditions, the traffic, as you said? You know, Le Mans is an extremely prestigious race, but are the actual track racing conditions tougher at the Nürburgring?
Every 24-hour race is a challenge. This is clear. I mean, to race 24 hours, it's a challenge for everybody in the team, for the drivers, for the car. So there's always, I mean, you can never say this is an easy 24-hour race and this is a hard, the hardest 24-hour race. But for me personally, Nürburgring is tougher because physically it's clear because in Le Mans you have a long straight. Also at Nürburgring, we have one very, very long straight. Yes, there you can relax and breathe and just calm down. But in Le Mans, you have more of this very long straight. But for me, why it's really tougher is the track. I mean, it's like up and down through the forest. Elevation changes like hell. You have also, like in Le Mans, the different class racing. I would say the difference between the fastest and the slowest car is higher at the Nürburgring. And there is for sure less space. So that the track is more narrow. In the end, you want to pass other cars as quickly as possible. But when the track is more narrow, it's also more risk. So that's why for me, it's my personal opinion, the 24 hours Nürburgring is tougher. But I don't say that it's easier to win the 24 hours of Le Mans compared to the Nürburgring. So in the end, it's both difficult to win. But as I said, personally, it's tougher to win the 24 hours of Nürburgring.
Virtually anything can happen at Nürburgring. I mean, like I was there the year that the hailstones came down and they had to stop the cars on the track because they just couldn't get up the hill. Did you say it was the craziest stint that you've done there?
That's a very good question. I would say I had few stints which were equally hard, but all of them was short before they red flagged it. So basically, it was raining like hell. I mean, rain like I have never experienced before or seen before, and foggy like hell. So this was, I mean, immediately after they red flagged it because it was impossible to drive. But for example, in I think 2020, it was foggy that you could not see anything, especially at the Grand Prix track. If I had to follow the white line on the edge of the track just to stay on track. And it was impossible to do the Grand Prix track fast, you know. In the end, it was just surviving. And I was just waiting until they red flagged it. But it took some time, actually, until they red flagged it. That's why I say it's really maybe the toughest 24-hour race I have experienced, yeah.
You did the Porsche Carreras as well. I mean, how did you prepare for the Nordschleife? How did you learn the track?
Obviously, now I know the track very well. But if I go back in 2012, it was my first experience to go to the Nordschleife. Actually, at this time, it was also not so easy because there was not so many simulators available. Now, nearly everybody at home has a simulator. But at this time, okay, you had few simulators somewhere, but it was not so common to go to the simulator this time. So I prepared, I remember exactly, I got a video from a World Cup race in 2011, Porsche Carrera Cup World Cup race, I think was it called, with 80, 90 cup cars. So I got the video of this race. I watched the video. It was still a CT. So it's a bit some time ago. And then I just went with my own car to the Nordschleife. I bought five laps. It was five laps. And then I just drove five laps to get used to the track. But it's also, at this point, I had no idea what to expect. So I was going out at these tourist laps. And in the end, everything was driving there. So I drove around the track. But I learned maybe 10% of the track. And then I went to my first test. And this was with a 997 cup car. And I remember my first laps, I was braking at corners, which is easy flat. And for the first time, I compared my data with my teammates' data, which was at that time a very experienced driver. It was Sean Edwards. I think I lost 20 or 30 seconds per lap to him. And I thought, okay, this is, it's incredible. But in the end, as I say, I was braking for corners where it's easy flat. And for example, it was Kesselchen. So it's not a corner. It's just a fast king and it's easy flat. but I was braking two times in Kesselchen, and for sure I lost only on the Kesselchen uphill, I think 5-6 seconds. So this was my first experience, but it's some years ago in 2012.
And now you're flat out wherever you can be.
Yeah, of course. Now my level is a bit different. I'm not 20 seconds off anymore.
Klaus, can you give the listeners a little bit of an insight into, you know, as a driver, how do you manage your time during the race? Because what do you do personally between stints, you know, to keep yourself sharp or rest and recuperate? What's your sort of personal preference for that?
Yeah, this actually, I think it's a good point. And it's important to start even earlier. Because, for example, now we have Tuesday. The most important part, in my opinion, or for myself now, is that you're just relaxing as much as possible. Because the weekend gets, I mean, there's so much excitement, there's so much going on. And in the end, the closer you come to the race, the less time you have for yourself. And it's important that you really take all the time you have to just calm down and relax. So it starts already now that you are really full of energy, that your batteries are fully charged. And then we are three drivers this year. So we decided with the team, also with the drivers, that we go only three drivers, which makes it for sure a bit more harder, tougher. But it's all about the preparation, all about managing your rest time. And I try to sleep as much as possible, or let's say relax as much as possible during the 24-hour race. So if I come out of after a double stint, first thing is I just go back to we have a container where we have some sleep place, take off my stuff, change myself, just wash or take a shower, and then immediately I already take my new overall, just in case if something happens that I'm ready for the next stint. But normally we should have 4 hours in between the next stint, or in between the two stints, because we are three drivers and everybody's doing a double stint. So it's like 4 hours for the next driver and then another, 2 hours for the next driver and another 2 hours for the next one. So it's 4 hours. But of these 4 hours, I would say you have maximum 2 hours where you can really relax and sleep, because you change yourself, speak with the engineers in between, you need to eat something. And then also you need to be ready before, because obviously we all know many things can happen. And if the car pits earlier, there should be always a driver ready to jump in. So, but for me personally, I try to sleep as much as possible, relax as much as possible, just that I'm fit all the time. And the problem gets later in the race, you know. In the end, let's say 10 hours or 15 hours is, yeah, you can survive without sleeping. This is all good. But the problem is after 20 hours, you don't have only the 24-hour race. You are already awake 10 hours before the race. So in the end, it's a really, really long day. And you need to be 100% focused and concentrated. And the more you relax in between, or the more you are able to relax in between, the fresher you are in the end. And that's where it counts also.
Obviously, you're part of the Falcon team. Falcon have been associated with this race for 40 years now. How much of an impact does that have on your race weekend? Because they're obviously using it for development. So how much do you need to work with them as well as just race?
I mean, we always work. We always try to improve. This is normal. That's part of racing. During the 24-hour race, it's more to get the best performance out of our package, out of our tire in combination with the car. But obviously before and after, there's a lot of development just to prepare the best way for this 24-hour race. But now it's clear for this weekend, everything is fixed. You know, we have our tires. We have different specs, obviously, because it's temperature related. We know where our how big our tire windows in terms of temperature. we have a setup where we believe it's the best, and then yes, of course, you make minor changes to everything, just to adapt to the track, to the conditions, to the temperature. But in the end, during this weekend, there's not really a big development going on. But for sure, after this weekend, we analyze everything. We as a driver, we give the feedback to our engineers, and then we work closely together to improve our whole package for the next event.
Klaus, is it possible to give the listeners an idea of just how many tires you'll go through on a 24-hour event like this?
Yeah, I mean, there is a rule. You are allowed to have 29 sets of slicks tires for the whole event. And rain tires, there's no limit. To give you a rough idea, for the 24 hours, we need, if everything works perfectly, if it's a green race, if there's nothing really to play with strategy, I mean, this is like, the chance is like 0%, I would say, that you have a green race and nothing is going on. But anyway, if it's like this, we have 21 stints. So we need 21 sets for the race. And as I said, it's 29 overall for everything, for the practice before, for the top qualifying, so the shootout, and then for the race. So in the end, normally there's enough tires, but for sure, you always want to have a margin, and just in case if something happens, to have some spare tires.
I'm a fan. It's a remarkable experience. When you're in the forests and the parties are going on and the barbecues are going on, how much are you aware of that as a driver, and how much of that is a part of the experience?
Yeah, just to see it, it's really amazing. Already now, I mean, on Tuesday today, or on Monday, or even the week before, you'll see how the people arrive and build up everything. This is really something special. And in the end, the whole event, it's just amazing. And for us drivers, or for me also, it's really impressive how many spectators are there and how much passion is there. Many years ago, I was walking around the whole track when I did still Formula cars. And to see what's going on there during the night, it's just crazy. But of course, if we have our race, we don't see really anything. I mean, you focus on the race. Yeah. You can smell the barbecue for sure. This you can smell in the car, but you don't. Obviously, you have no time to watch what's going on out there. It's just crazy how many people are there, but you have not the chance really to enjoy it because you focus on your own race.
And Klaus, you are in the number 33 this weekend, I think. You've got a couple of pretty quick teammates in there with you in terms of Alessio and Sven. How are those guys? Are they good fun? Are they very serious? What are they like as personalities? And how do the three of you gel as a team?
Yeah, that's something really important, that you work very well together with your teammates. Because in the end, we are, like you say, we are three drivers. We are a team. We have to work closely together. We need to trust each other. And honestly, it's... I'm really happy to drive together with Alessio and Sven. We have our aim. We tried really to prepare ourselves because it's like I mentioned already before. It's not so easy if you're only three drivers because it's a lot of driving for everybody and less resting. Both of them are really nice guys, super fast. Also, we don't have any ego, you know, it's like, what ego? It's not that we know how good we are and what we can do. And in the end, we all give our best and try to get the best result out of this. And I'm just looking forward that we can start soon. And I'm really happy how everything went this season so far. Because it looks, for me, very good that we have also a good chance to fight for a great result.
Concentrating on Nürburgring this weekend, and quite rightly, but you also race in America. I mean, do you find there's much difference between racing in Europe and racing in America?
Yeah, it's It's completely different. First of all, it's so many new things for myself because I, out of 11 race tracks, I knew two before the season. So now we had four races already. One track I knew, which was Daytona. The others I never drove before. We also were not testing there before, so it's quite some challenge. The tracks are not easy in US. There's not so much room, like at Nordschleife, for any mistakes. So one small mistake can destroy a lot. Can also destroy a whole weekend. But I have to say, I really like the challenge. It's something new for me. I'm happy that I had the opportunity to go to IMSA this season, and I really look forward also to the rest of the season. And for me personally, it was something where I had to go to another level also now, because in the end, before, I was not expecting that it's so tricky before this season. I thought I will manage it quite easy with all these new things, new championship, hard competition, new tracks. But I saw that I have to change my approach a bit, that I have to work harder in terms of preparation for the tracks, because there's not much practice also before these races. And in the end, believe me, the weekend is over so quickly. And yes, if I go another season next year, it will be much easier because I'm prepared. But for the first season, I was bringing myself to another level just in terms of preparation, and it works out really well. And I can see it's getting better and better. I can even improve many things, which is good. And yeah, everything is possible. Let's see how we will finish the season. I think we look really strong, and I have a good overall package with the teammate. So I'm happy about this and that I got the opportunity to race in IMSA.
But perfect boost would be a win this weekend, and how good would it be to get a win for Falcon and their 40th anniversary?
It's for me, it would be one of the greatest things what's happened in my whole life, and for sure also for the whole team, it's something where we work since years for it, and it's also a dream of for myself to win this race once in my life. So I mean, normally you should not speak about this before this weekend, but you asked me the question.
It's all okay.
But let's see. We give everything, and then we will see where we end up. The most important is we have to stay out of troubles. You need a lot of luck at this track, this race, like always. And then we see where we end up in the end.
Yeah. You just want to be in a position to go for it in the last couple of hours.
100%, yeah. And there's a few things. You need to be fast, obviously, because in the end you can do no mistakes, perfect race. But if you miss base, you will not win this race, because for this the competition is too high. There's too many cars. So in the end you need to have first also the base. And this looks very good, or looked very good so far, which is already the first step. And then obviously you need to be lucky also, because in the end, so many things can happen. We all have seen over the last years, you can't believe. I mean, you go into a corner and suddenly there's the car in front of you lost oil or water because it crashed or touched the barriers a little bit before. And in the end, your race is over. So this is Nordschleife. You all know this. You always have to, respect the Nordschleife. But of course, you need to stay out of trouble, be lucky, and then everything is possible.
Klaus, thank you for giving us a brilliant insight into what it takes to tackle such a difficult race. We hope that you're you do have that little bit of luck, but it sounds like you're prepared. So let's hope for a green race and that you and the guys at the Team Falcon have a good one.
I thought it was interesting that he took his road car round and then realised that he was braking in all the wrong places.
And obviously, that was at the start of his career, but it just shows you that it's one thing to understand the layout and the intricacies and, you know, where the corners go, but actually translating that into what you need to do in a race car is vastly different, isn't it?
Yeah, and now the fact, I mean, this is a boy that's at the top of his game, but still sees this as one of the pinnacles. The biggest thing he could do in his life is to win this race.
Yeah, I mean, I think he got a podium in his first appearance at Le Mans, so he is one quick boy. And I think what was interesting is to get that driver's perspective on what makes the Nürburgring 24 so different, because, you know, it's got this legend and it's the green hell. In the 60s and 70s, it really was a killer circuit. Now, thankfully, it isn't like that now. You know, no one wants to go back to that. But there's no getting away from the fact that, you know, it's still pretty narrow in places. As Klaus said, it's very three-dimensional, you know, a bit like Spa. It's very old-fashioned circuit. It's got that uphills, downhills, you know, a real mix of corners, and it's just long and fast, isn't it? So, you know, when you're in a race that's got, you know, more than 100 cars like this one, that's tough.
And the really good thing about it, for fans that are watching this, you'll be able to see how he gets on, because he's in one of the iconic cars. The Falcon Porsche is a stunning car to look at. So keep an eye out for it this weekend.
Yeah, it's a great looking car. They do a good job of putting that package together. And, you know, as Klaus said, he's got two really quick guys in with him, you know, Porsche drivers, lots of experience there. So I'm sure they go well. So, yeah, as we said to Klaus, hopefully they get a green race and he gets that little bit of luck that you talked about as well. Okay, listen, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that. Thanks very much for joining us for another episode of the Fast Pod. If you've got any questions about what we talked about this week, or you've got any suggestions for people we should interview in future episodes, we've already got some crackers lined up, but we're always open to hear what you'd like to see on the show. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and follow us on social media.